This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Turmoil in Europe and in North Korea. The world is changing rapidly. What can Americans do and what should we do? We discuss that now on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Welcome to the program. I am Caleb Colquitt, and rumors of my death have been, well, only slightly exaggerated. I felt pretty dead for the past couple of days, so I am glad to be back with you after being off for a couple of days. The thoughts, the prayers, the well wishes, they were all very much appreciated, and they did help my recovery. So
yeah, that must have helped.
Oh, it certainly did. Now, I just as a full disclaimer before I get into the meat of what we're talking about, because we do have a lot to talk about since I've been off for a couple days. Before we get into that, I do want to preface this by saying, if my voice does sound a little strange, I was having voice trouble, which is the reason that I was out. My voice still isn't anywhere near 100%, and I've got a cough drop in my mouth and probably will have for most of the show. So if my voice does sound weird, don't adjust your radio dial. It's just me.
Well, you know, we're in a strange profession where, you can work sick if you got a headache or something like that. Or, you know, an accountant can work if they lose their voice. But if you, Superman, if you lose your voice.
Right. It's the one part of me that I really can't do this job without. Well, that in my brain, but depending on which day, I may use that more or less. But anyway, here we do. We have a lot to talk about. I can't believe that I got sick, especially in the past couple of days because of everything that's changed. With everything that's going on in the world right now, I'm terribly concerned because since we last spoke on Friday, which keep in mind was about 4 days ago now, since I've had the opportunity to talk with you. What has happened in France has been terribly interesting to me. Now, what you're going to see, because I'm guessing some of you have heard something about it and you're thinking, okay, I know something big is happening in France. I saw them mention it like on the ticker tape on CNN, but I haven't really seen any stories about it. Here's why France is important, and this is why people need to be paying attention to what is going on in France. Marine Le Pen is one of the finalists now to be the president of France, because the way theirs works is you essentially, unless someone gets over 50%, they take all their candidates, they vote on them, and then you get down to the last two, and then you have a runoff. So very different from our system. But anyway, so what we've got now in France is we're down to two people. One who is a fascist, one who is a socialist. And the reason that that is significant is because the last time we had a wave of nationalism versus socialism and communism sparring against each other in Europe was what sparked World War II. You'll remember all this where Russia went the communist route, Germany went the fascist route, Italy went the fascist route. So there are these different countries splitting up into fascists and socialists, and now France is in a fight for its soul. And unfortunately, with the two candidates that they have now chosen, I'm having a real hard time seeing how this turns out good for us, or good for the French people, more importantly. Because now the choice we're left with is somebody who is a hard right nationalist fascist, or at least soft core fascism, certainly nationalist, claims nationalism. And then we have someone who is a socialist who, by the way, was with communist groups, had been a communist his whole life, and then basically switched to one of the main parties of France. I'd give you the name of the party, but honestly, I don't read French. So it's kind of hard for me to pronounce. But anyway, joined one of the main parties and said, I'm not a communist anymore. Which, by the way, interestingly enough, is exactly the strategy that Lenin took when he took power in Russia. He had been a communist, kind of disavowed communism, said, no, 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 I'm a democratic socialist. And that's how he got elected. And then, of course, once he was elected and got power and took and seized power, he governed like a communist. So we've seen this strategy before. We've seen this play out in other European countries before. And this wave of nationalism is incredibly disconcerting to me. And it's important to understand exactly what the political climate is in France right now and how it affects you. Because there was yet another terrorist attack in France just the other day, right before the election, right before their, well, what we would consider a primary. It's not a primary the way our primary runs, but it's where they vote on all the candidates. Now, it's interesting to me that in this particular terrorist attack, because we've seen this pattern, any of you that have been following national or international affairs knows that what typically happens is that ISIS comes out, performs an attack, waits about 3 or 4 days for the smoke to clear and it to not be in the news so much anymore, and then come out and claim responsibility so it remains on people's minds more. That's not what happened here. They committed this terrorist act, and then they were almost immediately, within hours of the attack happening, came out and claimed responsibility. Now, why would they do that? Why would they come out and claim responsibility for an attack that happened right before the French election? Well, Le Pen, Marie Le Pen, the nationalist, is promising to crack down on Islam. And we've seen this national wave taking effect in France. You remember the whole burkini thing, that they were literally outlawing burkas on beaches and saying, oddly enough, that your bathing suit is not skimpy enough for us, and so we're going to make that illegal. That was a weird thing in and of itself. But there is this nationalist movement trying to crack down on the massive amount of Muslims that are coming in, refugees that are coming into the country. Keep in mind that there are whole areas of France that are basically under Sharia law now that the French police won't even go into because it's too dangerous. So there is this split in France between the people who just want to be French and the Muslim population that's coming in. And what the French have done recently is this nationalism has come in. They want nothing to do with Islam. They want to drive the immigrants out. And this is a standard thing that happens in nationalism. And the French imams, the leaders of the Muslim faith there in France, they are now praying for a crackdown. Now, why would the Muslim people be praying for a crackdown on Muslims? Well, actually, it's quite simple. They are saying that they want a crackdown to happen so that it can inspire loyalty to the caliphate. So they're literally hoping for a crackdown on Muslims and Muslim teaching now, because they're hoping that it'll help them recruit people and inspire loyalty in the caliphate. Now, the caliphate is, of course, the global Islam, making the entire world Muslim. What Le Pen has run on now is she wants to exit the EU, which actually I would be in favor of, as well as NATO, an ally with Russia. So France, if this happens and we go through a big change in French leadership, we could find them on the side of Russia while we're on the side of NATO and the other European allies. People are starting to section off, and it could mean something detrimental for our country. Just something to think about. We'll talk more about this when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend all to the happiness of man. Thomas Jefferson.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in, and we are going to get back to everything that's happening on the world stage now, because I do think that it's important. I think that there's a lot that could affect us, not only as American citizens, but as Alabamians as well, and we're going to get into that here in a second. But I did want to mention, before we move on to that, because we have a surprise guest this morning, who, she wasn't a surprise that she was coming, I just didn't know when, and so I did kind of overpromise that we were going to get right to that at the end of this next break. But we're going to take a break now to talk to Miss Sherry Myers, who is the owner of The Biscuits.
That's right.
Still owner,
still
right?
Owner, yes, for one more week. I know everyone's been asking because, as you may have heard, the team was under contract to be sold, and the Southern League approved the process last Friday, as did Minor League Baseball. So it's just sitting on the commissioner's office, at the commissioner's desk in Major League Baseball's office. And so it's set to close next Wednesday, and I'm so grateful for how supportive and positive everyone has been about the fact, not only the success of the Biscuits, but the participation that you guys have had over the years with it. It's been an honor. And I know it's going to be just as good as I pass the baton, if you will, or the bat, right?
Right.
But meanwhile, we still have a lot of good stuff coming. Everybody can say, you know, everybody's like, well, we still the games. So, yes, everything stays the same. We've got another great homestand coming that we're continuing. We started last Saturday. I think you were there.
I was.
13 innings.
Great
it was
night.
A long, great night, but it shows how talent can really come about.
By the way, on that, Joe jinxed us.
He did?
Because we actually wound up having to leave a little bit early, and I had church.
That would
the next
be Joe
day,
Hunk,
course.
By
yes,
the way.
Yes,
yeah.
Joe Hunk, who's the host of the Fallout over on News Radio, or sorry, Sports Radio 740. And we were leaving because the
sprinkles.
Right, we left right about the tail end of the eighth. And like I said, I had church the next morning and everything. So we're walking out of the ballpark, and Joe says, "No, I thought it was a really good night. You know, the Biscuits won." He said, "Or at least they're probably going to win."
Yeah.
So Joe,
so he did jinx us. You're
yes.
right. I'll have to get back to him on that.
I blame Joe for that loss. But anyway, Joe Hunk, not Joe Marcus. Just to keep everything clear. But you know. With everything you've been describing, the process with the changeover of ownership and everything, it's interesting because the way you've described it is loads of paperwork, takes a lot of time to go through, and at the same time, you're saying not much is going to change. So in a lot of ways, it's like government.
Well, there are those who could think that, yeah.
No, I mean, I'm just teasing you.
I think what's neat about the new group is they'll be able to bring their own ideas, too. As you may remember, they own the Richmond Flying Squirrels and, you know, Lou DiBella, the my counterpart, mm-hmm. the person of ultimate authority. He and the owner, essentially, that represents his investor group, which is what we have as well. He is also a boxing promoter. So I think there's some fun entertainment ideas that can come out of that. But I think in general, the front office staff is just a great group of people. They work their fannies off. And I think that they appreciate that, and they will keep the schedule in place this season, maybe even enhance it. But certainly you can count on what you've bought or what you were planning to come to is going to be there. And the staff and the customer service that we've tried to train and deliver that I think everyone believes in and is passionate about will continue. So the only change is, as you say, the behind-the-scenes paperwork stuff, and that, you know, it'll be occasionally a few more different faces. I was here a lot. That's not that common for an owner. I think the difference is, so people are saying, when are we going to get the owner? You know, to be honest, it's a little bit like owners of Major League Baseball teams, owners of minor league baseball teams, especially usually don't live in their city. And I didn't live here either. I live in Chicago, but I feel like I lived here because I was here a lot, but also because you guys were so warm and kind to me. And maybe the difference is a female versus a male, too. I mean, I wanted to be here. I wanted to get to know everybody in the community. And I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying you got to be realistic. This guy lives in New York. And so you can't just call and say, can you come in for lunch? I mean, it just is not quite that easy, whereas I was just here a lot. And but I think that doesn't mean that they'll care. I just don't know if the schedule will be quite the same, you know, as I have. So don't feel bad if you say, well, can we have the owner on the air? And he's not available. But he has great people. He's sending someone here that is really, I think, will be an asset to enhance the current staff. And we have a great weekend coming up. So tomorrow is a great Gatsby night, which we've never done before. And
now, of course, that's significant also because Zelda Fitzgerald,
exactly.
F. Scott Fitzgerald's wife, that's what Zelda Road is named after. I mean,
that's
she's
right.
from this area.
That's right. And that we are working with the museum in order to deliver or produce this night. And post-game music will be the Lo-Fi Loungers. I don't know if you've heard them, but they're period appropriate. And then Friday's High School Spirit Night. So be sure to dress up with your high school spirit if you'd like. And we will recognize individual high school students, which is kind of neat to get them on the field and have have them recognized for what they're going on. Of course.
Oh, yeah, and a big deal for them. Big
deal
for their families.
Big deal, which is, again, to me, when people say, what do you think this whole minor league baseball is about? Sure, we know it's sports and we want to win, but to me, it's really about making memories. It's about delivering entertainment, having fun, and making memories. We've always said the mantra that we've had with our branding and what we try to reinforce with the staff is family, affordable fun. So there'll be Max fireworks post-game on Friday night, too. And then Saturday is probably one of my most favorite games of the entire year, and one that I'll really miss is Military Appreciation Night. And so that starts with, we really work with the bases to make sure that military or even including retired military have the availability to come to the game. And it'll start with the Recreators music group, which I think are so talented and fun, and they do a lot of military events. And before the game, which is 6:35, but I would come early because there will be an enlistment ceremony. And so General Stephen Quast will be doing that, 45 Marines, 30 Army, I don't know how many Air Force. It's pretty impressive.
And I'll say, too, as somebody who's chronically late, you do need to get to the games early.
Right.
Because I've been to some of them, you know, right as the first pitch is happening. And you do miss a lot of that preview stuff that's really fun.
Well, and the national anthem on a night like Military Appreciation Night is just so impressive. It's really neat. So, and then there's all sorts of military stuff that will happen during the game. And, of course, the post game will be Max fireworks, red, white, and blue. So it'll be a really neat night. On Saturday night, too.
Get out to the ballpark at Riverwalk.
Well, we appreciate all your support. I just want to say thanks to you guys and thanks to everyone at Cumulus. You've been fantastic, not only for the biscuits, but for me personally. So,
well, thank you so much, Ms. Sherry. And I wanted to say that even if these new owners come in, do a great job, do just as good as you, there's something that they can never claim, which is they were not the manager that brought the biscuits to Montgomery. That will always be you no matter what happens, and we're grateful to you as a community for doing that.
Well, thank you. And, of course, there'll never be a Yankee redhead in a skirt, so we can say that for sure.
That, too.
And on a personal note, I want to thank everybody connected with the biscuits for a wonderful 13 years, is it?
We're in our 14th.
And I want to speak for myself and some friends who we've been to like 600 biscuit games.
I can't believe that.
And we love it. And we really appreciate it.
We appreciate your business. That's so sweet of you to say, Joe.
Now, I've not been as many as Joe because there was a time where I was living in Auburn and going to college. But my family has had season tickets, you know, at least some of the packages, one package or the other, ever since 2004 when y'all first came.
And that's so fantastic. Thank you so much.
My family's a baseball family. We've gotten so much out of it, and we've appreciated it so much. So thank you, Ms. Sherry.
And you guys, that's what it is. It's about people, and it's about people in this community that have wanted to support it and care. So we appreciate it.
And we certainly appreciate everything the biscuits have done. Thank you so much, Ms. Sherry.
Thank you, guys.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 13:5-6. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me?
Welcome back, everybody. News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher. 860-1440 are the numbers. Always good to have a check-in with the owner of the biscuits, Ms. Sherry. We're certainly going to miss Sherry Myers being there at the helm. It's going to be somebody else, and we will do the best here to get him on the air so that you can meet him, get to know a little bit about him. But don't forget to hang out, support the biscuits. Be sure to get some tickets, and also, you can catch all 140 games broadcasted by our own Chris Adams Wall right here on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Now, getting back to the news, I think one of the most significant news stories that is being largely ignored by the national media and, well, pretty much all the other media in America as well, is everything that's going on with North Korea. Because we're kind of getting glimpses of it here and there, and they may mention it sort of offhand, but I don't think people really fully grasp and comprehend the gravity of the situation here. The truth is, if one little thing goes wrong at this point, at the point that we are right now, all we need is one little incident for us to be at war with North Korea. That's not insignificant. Now, I realize that at any given time, some random country could attack us and we'd be at war, so that's true of any country. But right now with North Korea, it seems as though even the slightest thing going wrong could wind up with us being at war with them. Not even necessarily something that would normally be considered an act of war because of the way the rhetoric is going back and forth, the way that our national security team is talking about it. Here's an example. Now, we don't know exactly what the content is going to be, but it has been announced that today Donald Trump is meeting with the entire Senate, the whole Senate, not just, you know, one caucus or a couple senators. No, the whole Senate is coming to the White House to hear the president speak. And he's going to be briefing them and talking to them today at the White House about what's going on in North Korea. That's the whole purpose for the meeting. This is unprecedented. Never happened before. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's preparing the Senate for war with Russia or asking them about, you know, what's the process here, how exactly could be. He could be filling them out for a declaration of war because, of course, you need Congress on board with that. He would also need to talk to the House, but it'd be a little bit trickier to have the entire House over to the White House. But when he's talking to the Senate today, not exactly sure what the content's going to be, but we know the subject matter. We know that it's about this North Korea situation, and this is something to be taken incredibly seriously. It is possible, and there are some people that have hypothesized this, so I'm not ruling it out. It is possible that this whole meeting is essentially a very elaborate bluff. It could be that Donald Trump is just trying to signal to the world, hey, we're talking about going to war with North Korea, saying, hey, we will do it. We're not afraid to go to war with North Korea if that's the last resort. So it could be that this is all an elaborate spectacle. I'm not ruling that out, but at the same time, there are several other signs that have pointed to this being a real possibility. For example, we've got Vice President Mike Pence cutting his tour of the Asian country short and coming back home, which could signal, A, that they want him there for the proceedings that are going to go on, but could also mean, well, we fear for the vice president's life and his security, and that's the reason that we're bringing him back, because things are about to get very sticky in Eurasia. So the entire Asian continent could be shaken up by this. Now, it's important to understand exactly what all this would look like. For example, right now what we've got is that even with conventional weapons, even with weapons that we are familiar with, non-nuclear weapons, Korea could level Seoul within approximately 2 hours, according to our own intelligence. That's not their bluster. That's us doing the research. Just with the weapons that we already know for a fact that they have. So even if they don't have nukes, even if all the missiles that we've seen them test, that's the only thing that they've got right now, they could still level Seoul within a couple of hours. So if war is declared and North Korea decides to strike against Seoul, the death toll would still be in the millions within a couple of hours. And that could very easily trigger a world event that starts World War III. Well, he's talking about now, keep in mind, this is all assuming that our intelligence is good and they don't have a nuke. So, in a sense, if we're at war with Korea and they start bombing Seoul just with conventional weapons, that's actually not the worst-case scenario. I mean, it'd be terrible, but it's still not the worst-case scenario. The worst-case scenario is, of course, that they secretly have a nuclear weapon. Now, when we're talking about nearby Asian countries, China, Japan, so on and so forth, they could also be dramatically affected by this because, as far as we know, Korea doesn't have intercontinental missiles, but they do have weapons that could hit targets as close by as China and Japan. And so this is something that we really have to start taking seriously. Furthermore, when talking about who in Asia would line up with us, who would help us out, well, China has said that they will not be taking action without the UN. So We're not sure exactly where China would fall. China has been aligning themselves with North Korea in the past. They've supplied them with things. But a lot of people hypothesize it's not because China would be against us. It's because China wants us preoccupied with North Korea to keep us from asking too many questions about what they're doing. There may be some legitimacy to that. And I really don't think that China is lusting after a war with us. I haven't seen the ferocity. I've not seen them coveting that. China just wants to survive for the next 500 years. That's basically their focus. Like I said, they're always focused about, you know, five centuries into the future. That's just the way that they think. And so I don't think that China is going to voluntarily go to war with us. North Korea will. The guy that's running their government is a psychopath that kills members of his own family. So, and based on the things that he said in his public appearances, I think Kim Jong-un actually believes that he can beat America in a war.
That's the scary thing.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking the same thing. That when, you know, we say, hey, he's crazy. But you know what? He's the crazy is like a fox. And he really, I agree with you. He really thinks he can win a shootout with us or with anybody.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think that we would lose the war if we go to war with just North Korea and that's where it stops and no other countries get involved. But at the same time, that would still cause a massive loss of life. And so I'm not worried that we'll lose the shootout, like you said. The problem is how many people have to die in that shootout. That's the cost that we should be considering because it's going to be American lives, too. We have a very strong presence over there, and we're already engaged in, arguably, depending on how you define which each conflict is, we're already involved in about three wars right now. We really don't need to be spreading ourselves any more thin than we already have, and not to mention the way that we're in debt right now. So this is going to greatly affect us. Now, it is possible that all of this is a big lead up to absolutely nothing, because we've seen that in history before. Remember the Cuban Missile Crisis? Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't have taken it seriously, because we did. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't have had our eye on Cuba and Russia and what would have essentially been a proxy war 90 miles off our coast, because we did. But at the same time, just because it wound up not being a big deal doesn't mean that we shouldn't have paid attention to it, because frankly, the way that we prevented it is that we were paying attention to it and we were clear about our intentions. We're not doing that as much anymore. The American people don't seem interested in the fact that we could be looking at the Cuban Missile Crisis. And if this goes south, if this goes the way that we're not predicting, which is possible, this could theoretically set off a chain reaction that leads to a massive war. Not with just with North Korea, but with other countries in Europe and Asia as well. Because keep in mind, I already pointed out in the very first part of our segment that we've got Marie Le Pen versus a socialist in France. If those old factions start splitting up into fascist socialist regimes and start aligning themselves with different people, whether it's Russia, Iran, this could cause us to divide up into teams to where there's really not much coming back from that, and we could wind up in a war. Now, granted, this is the worst case scenario, and we're in the very, very early stages of that, which means that if that's the case, it's probably a few years off at least. But it's better to start working on that and planning for it now rather than ignoring it for the time being. Because I don't think that that's exactly what's going to happen, especially not with North Korea being the catalyst. But we can't ignore the possibility. We can't ignore the possibility with that. And especially when you consider that when we were talking about World War II, that's what the start of this looked like. We had different countries going to war with each other over essentially this. Because keep in mind, the communists and the fascists, they did ally themselves for a while and then split up. And so we've got this divide between the two of us. And the reason that this is significant for us is, keep in mind, Alabama has a very big military presence. There are a lot of our citizens, whether they live here and are permanent residents now or they're stationed here and they moved here, there are a lot of Alabamians, a lot of people right here in Montgomery. Think about our Air Force bases. that would be affected by this. This is going to be something that greatly impacts our community if we wind up in full-fledged war, because North Korea is not Iraq. North Korea is not Libya. These guys have weapons on a scale that these terrorists that don't have legitimate governments, they wouldn't even be able to imagine. And they would be able to cause destruction on a scale that, I mean, as bad as ISIS and the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas are, North Korea could cause damage that they could never dream of with the kind of weaponry that they've got. So we're playing a very, very dangerous game. And so I would ask each and every one of you, because either way, no matter what happens, whether it winds up being the Cuban Missile Crisis where it looks really bad and then all of a sudden we're able to stave off cataclysm, or it winds up being World War III, either way, our country is going to need an awful lot of prayers right now. And so that's what I would ask. Pray for the country. Pray for the world. All right. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Yeah, Joe, there's not a file pulled up. That's why you can't get it to start.
No, it was. Oh.
Yeah, there's not now because there's not a waveform. But anyway, all right, we are back. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in. You are here with the Patriot Preacher, and we will go ahead and jump to the phones. 860-1440, we've got a couple lines open. First, we're going to go to Coronado on line one. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, sir.
Hey, your phone's breaking up a little bit. What's on your mind, Coronado? I'm sorry, Coronado. We're gonna have to let you go. I apologize for that, but we just can't hear you. I'm sorry. All right. So, 860-1440. If you want to get in, talk about what we were talking about earlier with everything that's going on in the world. I apologize for that, but you know make sure that your phone's working properly before you call in. But anyway, did want to switch topics here for just a second because I thought something interesting happened earlier this week. You remember that before we were talking, I believe it was Thursday when we started bringing this up, you had Bill O'Reilly and everything that happened with him at Fox News, and you remember that what I told you at the time was that if they can do it to Bill, they can do it to anybody. And what's going to happen is they're going to start smelling blood in the water, and they're going to go after the other people on Fox, try to get all the conservatives off of Fox, and the next person they're going to go after is Sean Hannity. Well, apparently I was right, because what happened with Sean Hannity is that now he is facing sexual harassment allegations by a lady that he had as a guest on a show several times. She happens to be a liberal, but she also alleged a long time ago that he was also stealing funds from a charity that he raised money for, except the money wasn't going to him, and she alleged that it was paying for his private jet and his suite. Actually, the exact same charity, which was it's sort of a conglomerate charity that does things for veterans, which by the way includes, for example, the Wounded Warrior Project, some other very well-known charities. Well, it turns out after doing a little research, the charity found that when Hannity came to speak for their organization to raise funds for them, he paid all of his own travel expenses, and so not only was he not wasting money from the charity, he wasn't even using any money from the charity to pay for those things. He actually paid for that himself. So this lady's been known to lie about Hannity in the past, and she alleged on a radio show, she was doing an interview, they were actually asking her, because she had been on Fox several times before, about Bill O'Reilly, and she said, well, I don't know, I never had any problems with Bill O'Reilly, but she accused Hannity of sexual harassment. So first of all, I told you that Hannity was going to be next, and this is only the first in a wave of many. Now, this one can probably be easily disproven, But we're going to see, because, again, liberals smell blood in the water, and this is their big chance to get rid of the only mainstream news source that's not uber-liberal. They're going to start going after the rest. They're going to go after Tucker Carlson and all the others. But the next big target is Hannity, because Hannity's really the only person left at Fox News with a lot of authority and a lot of seniority. Because I love Eric Bolling. I'm glad that he finally got his own show. But he's not been on the air long enough to have that clout that a lot of his colleagues have, like O'Reilly, like Hannity. And so what they're going to try to do is they've already put a major dent in Fox News by getting rid of O'Reilly. Now they're going to try to get rid of Hannity. And the problem with this is that it silences free speech in more ways than one. Because what we learned from the O'Reilly thing is that really you don't have to prove that someone did something wrong. You just have to allege that somebody did something wrong. Because that's what happened with O'Reilly. They never proved any of those charges. They never, I mean, they did a probe into it but couldn't find any evidence to support it. But they still fired him anyway. They figured it was better to just cut their losses. And so now what we've got is a society that all you have to do is say that somebody did something wrong to get them fired. And the reason that that silences free speech and the reason it makes me uneasy is because it makes a host less likely to invite someone on their show that disagrees with them. Because if you get into a debate and the other person doesn't like what you say, all you have to do is allege sexual harassment and you can get them fired. And so now a host has to think, okay, this person really hates me, and they've had it out for me and have for a really long time. So I'd like to get them on the show to kind of clear things up and have a spirited debate, because that's good ratings. But now I'm worried that maybe I couldn't do that because they might try to get me fired. And so you see what I'm saying here is it actually keeps people that disagree apart from each other, because I like having those spirited debates. I like seeing people on the news with people that vehemently disagree with them and have it out and decide, you know, who has the better argument, the stronger case, whatever. But what this does is it not only silences people just because there are people that allege that they did something wrong. I'm afraid that what it's also going to do is a host now has to think, okay, for the good of my career, I may just it may be easier for me to only have on guests that agree with me. And unfortunately, that would probably be the case. And so it not only stifles free speech in the sense that it throws people off the air for no good reason, but what I'm concerned about is that it may also stifle free speech, because now all of a sudden you have to consider those things. You have to consider whether or not the next person you invite on the air with you may try to get you fired just because you happen to disagree with them. That to me is concerning. And furthermore, with everything that's going on with Hannity, with O'Reilly, you notice how usually what happens, and it's because the media is going to play it up, conservatives are at a huge disadvantage when it comes to this. There have been liberal hosts and celebrities that have had their careers ruined by allegations of sexual harassment. That's true. But the media seems to like talking about it an awful lot more when it happens to be a conservative. And so you're already working against the tide when something like that happens. Hopefully they can clear all this up. Hour 2 of the Patriot Preacher is next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Earth Day was this weekend, the holy day for all the people who worship the earth just like the pagans of old. What happened? We'll talk about that now on The Patriot Preacher. Welcome everyone to The Patriot Preacher. Hour 2 is on now. And just to reiterate what I said at the start of the show, if you're just now joining us, I have been sick for the past couple days, which means my voice is not exactly where it should be, and I do have a cough drop in, so if I sound a little weird, I apologize, but that's why. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in. Before we do get into our subject matter, I wanted to mention this real quickly. Score big with our latest sweet deal for the Yellowhammer Cafe. $5 to $10 gift certificates for $25. Enjoy breakfast, lunch, breakfast or lunch at Yellowhammer and save 50% with this super sweet deal. On sale Friday, April 28th, 8 a.m. at newsradio1440.com. Now, getting into our subject matter, with everything that happened on Earth Day and the leftists looking for really any excuse to march for anything here in the past couple of years, they decided to do a science march for global warming, which is interesting to me because it's not even necessarily science that everybody agrees on, and it certainly, and this is, and I'm going to come back to this point in a second, but what to me is ironic about it is science should never be mixed with politics, because politics, by its very nature, always has an agenda. Science is supposed to be agenda-free. Science is supposed to not care what the outcome is as long as it gets the outcome that follows the data. But what they've done here is they have basically all come out and admitted, yes, we're scientists and we're also political animals and activists. Well, if that's the case, then you probably shouldn't be scientists. Now, I'm not saying that a scientist is forbidden from having opinions or forbidden from having a political affiliation of some sort. But at the same time, there's a difference in marching because it's something you politically believe and marching because you think that the government should enforce a certain view of science. Because if you're wanting the government to follow a certain idea about what science is, then you're saying that science should, by its very nature, have an agenda, which the worst thing you can do in science is make a conclusion before you've done the research, done the experiment. But that's what they're advocating for here. And their big complaint, the reason that they said that they were marching, is because the scientists were complaining that the government and the Trump administration is cutting funding to science. Well, first of all, that's not entirely true, because they're not cutting funding to science. They just have not increased funding to science like it has been done every other single year. No cuts to scientific research, grants, that kind of thing have been made so far. They could happen in the future, but they were claiming that cuts have happened. Cuts have not happened. We have not seen cuts to the scientific community or to scientific research. So this idea that this is somehow we're seeing cuts to scientific research by the federal government because of Trump, first of all, and this is part of the problem I have with the whole budget discussion that's going on right now, the president doesn't set the budget. The president can issue executive orders and he can sign a budget or veto a budget, but he cannot pass a budget. That resides with the House and the Senate, and then it goes to his desk for approval. So he's not the one that actually makes that up. So they're A, protesting the wrong person, and B, well, that's not what's going on anyway. They haven't actually done any cuts to these scientific programs they're complaining about. They just have not increased them. And here's another problem that I have with the whole idea of what they were doing there. When we're talking about the government funding science, when science is useful, it funds itself. It doesn't need government grants. It doesn't need government interference. Because there are investors that see some kind of use in the scientific research that they're doing, and so they'll fund it in hopes of getting a return on their investment. You'll also have charities that, for example, medical research is a great example. You have people like the Relay for Life and other charities that will fund medical research to help improve people's lives through that. You also have people that are actually customers. You know, how do we fund the new iPhone? By buying the current iPhone. How do we fund the new big Samsung? By buying the current Samsung. And because of that, market forces will interject itself into the scientific community because people want the new technology, they want whatever's on the horizon, and because of that, they'll buy the current thing, and that will in turn fund research for new developments. And so science should not need the intervention of politics, because if you're talking about a free market, science thrives in that. And the things that we want funded as a society will necessarily get funded because of that. So, you know, they can complain about the government not doing, but keep in mind, the government doesn't always make wise investments because it doesn't have to have a return on its investment. They're spending somebody else's money. If you don't believe me, Google Robo Squirrel. I swear I'm not making this up. This is too stupid for me to have come up with. They actually had millions of dollars in federal government grants to test how snakes react to robotic squirrels. Which my first reaction is this a real problem? Are there robotic squirrels out there in the wild that we don't control that the snakes are reacting to? And furthermore, we all remember, it's not just with research for curiosity. You've also got, for example, Solyndra, one of the big companies that was quote-unquote leading innovation in solar energy. But the problem is, because they got a lot of government money, they were spending it on extravagant things that actually had nothing to do with their research. They had a very nice facility, far nicer than they actually needed, with a lot of amenities that didn't help them in furthering their research because they didn't have to answer to a customer base. They didn't have to answer to investors because they were funded by the government. And so at the same time, we've got this this interesting back and forth that it seems as though every time that politics does interject itself into science, science is the one that actually suffers. And yet we've got these people who are doing the March for Science. I'm sure that some of them were scientists. I'm guessing that a large portion of them were not. But either way, we have these people that are claiming to march for science, that are marching for government intervention, which every time we've ever seen it done in the past, actually winds up hurting the scientific community and hurting scientific development. There have been a handful of exceptions, but I contend that even had those exceptions exist, they would have done better in a free market. Just a quick example before we do go to our break, and we are a little bit over time. But you look at technology in America versus Europe. Broadcasting technology, radio, TV, film, all of those different mediums, they were controlled exclusively by the government in Europe and primarily by the free market here in America. And who produces all the TV shows and movies for the rest of the world? The one that had the free market system, case in point. All right, so just something to think about. And on the other side of this break, we're going to come back with Bill Nye, the not-so-science guy. That and your calls next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers, and we're going to come to the phones in just 1 second. Bama Jammers presents a night of local music to support the Humane Society of Chilton County. It's the second show in this concert series benefiting local humane societies sponsored by Power Sounds USA and Cumulus Broadcasting. Bama Jammers, Outside the Inside, and more. Live at Smokehouse Barbecue in Millbrook this Saturday. Ooh, I love that place. Doors open at noon. Show begins at 1 p.m. VIP tickets, including a catered buffet, just $25. General admission, $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Check the Bama Jammers Facebook page or get yours at the door starting at noon. Do want to jump to the phones here real quickly. We've been talking about Earth Day and the March for Science. So we're going to go to Curtis on line one. Good morning, Curtis.
Hey, Caleb. I certainly couldn't agree more with you with regard to these interest groups that their primary objective, of course, is to keep the government lifeline going in terms of being funded, et cetera. And I agree with you. I think you're saying that for the most part, you know, even though there may be some benefit to what they do, for the most part, it's wasteful, it's not profitable, and if it were profitable and economical and viable and all the rest, then the free market would say, hey, we can do this on our own.
Well, see, and that's exactly, and you're right, Curtis, that's the problem with big government, is that it draws forth the incompetent and the incapable. See, yeah. what it has done is, you can get an investment, quote unquote, in your research from the private sector, or you can go to the government, which is far more likely to fund something that they're not going to see a return on.
Right. And then those people get lobbyists and they get people behind them. But hey, here's my question for you, because it's kind of very similar.
Okay.
It was with regard to the problem with government and government screwing up everything. If you look at tuition, and we know in this country people are so far in debt with tuition and loans, and you say, why have tuition rates gone up exponentially higher than inflation? So every year, you know, tuition goes up over the last 20, 30 years. And you go, well, inflation has only been this. So, you know, it's just been exponentially high. Hmm. My question to you is, why has tuition been so expensive relative to the cost of living and so forth?
All right. Well, I will answer that in just a second. Thank you so much for your call, Curtis. I appreciate it. The reason that Curtis is asking this question is, and he's right, if you're looking at the research, if you compare inflation, which has increased the price of everything, food, clothing, shelter, absolutely everything, and you compare that to tuition, tuition has gone up way more, and there's a couple reasons why. A, you've seen an increase in federal funding to state universities and other universities as well. Not so much private. I think there's probably some grants here and there for some research, but by and large, you're seeing an increase in funding. And then you're also seeing, and this is what I think is the big driving factor, because if you ever listen to conservatives and they talk about the problem with college debt, they talk about bringing the cost down. Whenever you hear Democrats, they don't really talk about bringing the cost of tuition down. They talk about an increase in student loan availability. And so, or talk about making college free like Bernie Sanders. And so what you've got is, you have this culture to where there are entire universities dedicated to quote-unquote higher learning, which in a lot of cases means liberal indoctrination. We've gone through, you can see the results of it. Typically, people tend to leave universities far more liberal than when they went in. And a lot of that has to do with the culture that liberals are it's perfectly okay. If you're a conservative, you've been seen as a pariah. Luckily, not as much in our state universities here in Alabama, but certainly in state universities over the country. And so liberals love the idea of funding endlessly these colleges, because if they do, and if they pump more money into the availability of college loans, then they can A, make you dependent on the government because you're in debt to them, and B, they're essentially funding a massive indoctrination camp. Now, that doesn't mean every single person that comes out of college walks away a liberal or anything like that, but there is a pretty high rate of people going in one way and coming out more liberal, and this goes all the way back to Woodrow Wilson, who was the president of Princeton University. And he said his job as the president of Princeton was to make men as unlike their fathers as he possibly could. So you do have this whole system that's built around, in a lot of ways, or at least it appears that way to a lot of liberals, essentially they're funding making people more liberal, people making people more likely to vote for one of their causes. And so you have that combined with them trying to make the availability go up. And so when you flood any market, regardless of what market it is, if the government, for example, tomorrow, I'll just use this as an example. If the government tomorrow said, we want people to have more bicycles, and they flooded the market and gave everybody a $70 voucher for bicycles, what do you think is going to happen to the price of bicycles? Well, the cost of bicycles is going to go up, not because the bicycles improved, but because now that everybody essentially has to have it and $70 is taken straight off of the top to where you don't have to pay that first $70. Well, for the people who want bicycles, why not charge more? Now, there are going to be some people that buy exactly a $70 bicycle because, you know, it's free and they don't. But there's also going to be people that want the really nice bicycles. And so now all of a sudden, a bicycle that might have been $70 is going to be exponentially more because that's the nicer version. And so anytime you throw money into a market, it distorts it. And that's the exact same thing with student loans. And so that's part of the reason that college tuition has gone up way more than the cost of living and other costs surrounded with inflation. Now, I did want to get back to the one of the things that we were talking about earlier. You got Bill Nye, the not-so-science guy, making the rounds on Earth Day. First of all, can we please stop pretending that Bill Nye is a scientist? I mean, yes, he has a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering, so he has a Bachelor of Science. But by that definition, I am also a scientist. And I have a bachelor of degree in ag communications. That's a bachelor of science. In fact, if you're talking about climate change, which is, it seems to be the favorite thing that they have him on for, I have more background in meteorology than he does because I have an ag degree. Now, I have very little. I'm not claiming that I'm an expert on climate and weather. All I'm saying is, because, I mean, we would have guys like our partners at News Alabama News Network that would run circles around me in their meteorology department. But what I am saying is even my extremely limited knowledge of this that I just kind of picked up from being an ag major, which, you know, we have a little bit of that because it, of course, affects the way crops grow. That makes me technically more qualified from an educational standpoint to comment on weather patterns than Bill Nye.
What is his field of expertise?
Mechanical engineering.
Yeah,
that's what his degree is in, mechanical engineering. And I'm sure he's, I mean, I don't think Bill Nye's a moron or anything like that, but he's not like the foremost authority in the world on climate patterns, which is what we kind of treat him like.
You know, I don't know that anybody is really a good authority on that. You know, maybe God, but I mean, you check back and look at records going back as long as they have records.
Right.
And I, at least, it's hard for me to really come up with any conclusion except that climate is up and down and it changes and it changes and it morphs and it goes back. And then you look at a graph over hundreds of years and there's really not that much change in precipitation and temperature.
No, I mean, the climate is fairly stable. You're right, Joe. And that's the problem with what Bill Nye is peddling here is that he is someone who really doesn't have much background in this stuff. Now, I'm not saying he hasn't studied, and I'm not saying that because you don't have a degree in it, your opinion means nothing. All I'm saying is, can we stop treating him like he's the Stephen Hawking of climate change?
Wow.
I mean, I'm sorry, but he's not. And they bring him on like he's some kind of expert. Why don't they bring on some actual climatologists? Because even if they wind up agreeing with global warming, and I know a lot of them do, I could take that a little better than bringing on a guy who played a character on a kid show back in the 90s. Now, I liked that show. I watched Bill Nye when I was a kid growing up on PBS. I mean, it was a good show. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, I don't understand why we're bowing down to him like he's some kind of expert on this particular subject matter. All right. Before we go to a break, I did want to mention my good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Now, very trustworthy. Been in business here in the Montgomery area for 50 years. There is absolutely no shortage of repeat customers that they have in this city. That's the only way you survive in a particular place for 50 years like that. It's because they're doing a good job. It's because they look at your car, they put you in the driver's seat, make you the expert. They want to make you feel like you're in charge of what happens to your own car, because whenever they find something, they ask you first, they consult you on it, they come back and they give you a fair price, and they do great work. So check them out today, whether you need new tires, maybe just need an oil change and your air filter replaced, or you need major engine repair like I've had done there. Go check them out. The people that I use, Jim Woodham, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
the general hopes and trusts that every officer and man will endeavor to life and act as becomes a Christian soldier, defending the dearest rights and liberties of his country. George Washington.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call, weigh in, let me know what's on your mind. Now, speaking of the whole Bill Nye thing, in an interview Sunday, I believe it was on CNN, Bill Nye is getting into a debate about this whole Earth Day thing with a physicist named Will Happer. And Happer is a, what Bill Nye would call, a climate change denier. The irony is, Will Happer is an actual scientist, Bill Nye is not. And so they got into this debate, and Bill Nye was saying it is wrong for the government, citing specifically the Trump administration, to not fund science because it's mandated by the Constitution. And he said it's in Article 1, Section 8. Now, we're actually going to read Article 1, Section 8, and I'm just not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to skip down to the part that Bill Nye was referring to. And this actually is in the Constitution. To promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive rights to their respective writings and discoveries. See, all Bill Nye said was to promote the progress of science. That's where he stopped. Apparently, that was the only part of that particular section that Bill Nye cared about. But if you read on, you read the part that we just read, what does it say? To promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times an author's and inventor's exclusive rights to their respective writings and discoveries. See, Bill Nye is saying that the Constitution says we should fund science. That's not what it says at all. All it's saying is that when a scientist discovers something, publishes a paper, something like that, the government has a responsibility to protect someone else from stealing that work. What it's talking about here are patents and copyrights. It's not talking about wholesale funding science. That's not the government's job. It's not its role. And Bill Nye, just like on the climate change thing, he is counting on you being dumb. He is counting on the people that are hearing him to not do any further research other than what he's saying and take only what he says at face value. Same thing with the climate change thing. He's expecting you to not do any research on it, and that is why he's saying it and feels like he can get away with it, because he's expecting you not to look into it at all. He also said, and this is just a long line in things that he said that were incredibly misleading, he talks about Nixon being the man who started the EPA. Well, that's true, but then he goes on to say, and Nixon was a conservative. Nixon was not a conservative. Now, he was a Republican, but that's not the same thing, as we've often discussed. You can be a Republican and not be a conservative, the same way you can be a Democrat and not be a liberal. Nixon was a big government authoritarian. There is nothing less limited government than an authoritarian. And so the idea that Nixon was a conservative and was funding the EPA, or is the one who founded the EPA, is not true. He did found the EPA, but he was by no means a conservative. He was not a limited government guy, and a limited government guy, by definition, would not have started the EPA. That would have been something that a conservative would have left to state governments to do. And in this debate, he was going back and forth with Happer, and he said, well, here's the thing. This is not controversial in mainstream science. Well, actually, it is. There's a lot of people, scientists, both experts in climatology and scientists that are in other fields that have seen the data and don't confirm it. It's not nearly to the rate that Bill Nye would like you to believe it is. But let's just accept Bill Nye's argument for 1 second. Let's assume that what Bill Nye is saying, that climate change denial is not in the mainstream of conservative, or not in the mainstream of science. Let's just assume that that is true, and there's only a handful of scientists that are skeptical of the science of global warming and climate change. Let's just assume that that's true for just a moment. That doesn't make it right. Even if it was not the case, mainstream science is not always correct. It's easy to claim that all mainstream scientists agree with your definition, since your definition of mainstream science excludes people who are skeptics of climate change. See, if your definition of who's a real scientist is, well, they believe in climate change, then it's easy to say, well, all scientists believe in climate change, because you've shifted the definition of what it says. If by your definition the climate change deniers are not scientists, then it's easy to say that all of mainstream science accepts climate change, because you've excluded the only people that disagree with it. So you've not made a statement which has any intellectual prowess behind it. All you've done is say, well, if they don't believe in global warming, then they're just climate change deniers and they're not real scientists. Thus, all real scientists believe in climate. Well, that would be like saying only human beings believe that Jesus Christ is the Messiah. Therefore, all humans believe that Jesus. Well, that's not the case. You're just changing the definition. Changing the definition in the middle of an argument doesn't strengthen your case. And furthermore, mainstream science, like I just said, it's not always right. For a very long time, medical science believed that bloodletting was an incredibly helpful practice that was accepted by the vast majority of mainstream doctors.
And for a very long time, I'm reading about that, or not exclusively about bloodletting, but medicine in the 19th century. Now, that's not that long ago, and it was even as late as during the Civil War and after, they didn't even know about actually washing
infection,
their hands.
They
would operate with dirty hands and
dirty tools.
Because they thought that there was no danger in it. These were men of science.
Right. And that was the mainstream belief back then. The mainstream belief by scientists at one time was that the sun revolved around the earth. That was the mainstream scientific belief.
And that it was flat.
Right. That did not make them right, though. And that's the thing that I'm trying to get across, is just because that's not the way science works, and Happer actually brought this up. Science is not politics. You don't bring it up to a vote. You aren't right just because more scientists agree with your theory than the other theory. And so you can be the only person in the world that believes that something is right and it actually be right and everybody else be wrong. That doesn't make you wrong. We don't have a community of agreement in scientific fields. And a lot of this has to do with academic inbreeding, because we've accepted a paradigm to where you're not a real scientist if you don't believe in climate change, and so you can only be a real scientist if you do. And so we have taught people that if you disbelieve this, then you're not to be taken seriously. And that's what we're running into. That's the problem that we have here. So just like his whole thing on global warming, Bill Nye has set up a never miss shot. And what I thought was funny and was very telling about the interview at the end of it is that Bill Nye, instead of countering the points that Happer was making, he just said, I would ask you to cut this out. So that was a polite way of saying, please shut up because you're hurting my points. And at the same time, this is the irony that I found in the whole thing, because in this particular interview, there are two hosts of the show, so two journalists. Then you've got Bill Nye, again. He has a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering and had a kid show that dealt with science. That's his qualifications. And then this other lady that is a supporter of the EPA. The only person on this panel that's an actual scientist is Will Happer. And he's treated as though he's the dunce, he's the idiot. Even though he's the only one that actually has some qualification in that particular room to talk about it. Now, he's not a climatologist, he's a physicist, but he's still a scientist. And physics does play into weather patterns, and it especially plays into when you're talking about air pollution. And so he's the only one with some actual academic credentials to speak on the matter, and he's treated by the other four people as though he's the idiot, he's the outcast. That, to me, was ironic, and I thought it was pretty funny. And here's another thing before we do hit our break. Bill Nye refers to anyone who does not accept his paradigm of climate change being real, of it being man-made, as science deniers. And at the same time, his show, which appears on Netflix now because, you know, mainstream TV wouldn't pick him up, his show just did a thing yesterday about how transgenderism is real science. So you can look at a man with all his genitals intact and say, that's a woman, and that's not a denial of science. But saying, maybe this climate change thing isn't 100% right, then you're a science denier. Think about that for a second. In fact, and I don't recommend watching this because it's the worst 3 minutes of my life. They went through this whole music video about... I can't even go into it. I can't say it on the radio because it's too weird. They didn't even really use the scientific terms there. But the irony in all that is sex has been settled science for, well, since the beginning of time, actually. And even if you do wind up having the sex change operation, even if you wind up having, you know, apologize for my crassness here, I can't think of another way to say it. If you're willing to have the Franks and beans lopped off and have them surgically construct female genitals where that used to be and give you breast augmentation, you still have a Y chromosome. And that's basic biology. When they pull out a cell from your body, it will say you are a male, no matter what you do. In fact, if you die and you're buried and an anthropologist finds your bones 10,000 years down the road, and they do research on your cells, they're going to say, yep, he was a man. Doesn't matter what you dress like, doesn't matter what you feel like, doesn't matter if you have surgery, even. You'll still be a man. A woman will still have 2X chromosomes. Every cell in her body will tell you that she is a woman. But somehow we're the science deniers. Bill Nye is the most famous science denier in the world.
His name says it all.
That's right.
Deny it.
All right. We'll be back. Star Spangled Sermon coming up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Before we do get into the Star-Spangled Sermon, I did want to mention this. Number one ranked Prattville Patriots beat the Pensacola Jets 50-6 in an away game last Sunday. This week they take on the Atlanta Tigers at Stanley Jensen Stadium in Prattville. Admission is just $10, kids under 5 free, concessions, halftime games, pregame meet, the players, kids zone, and more. Pre-game festivities start at 4, kickoff is at 6. Getting into the Star-Spangled Sermon, just want to delve right into the scripture here. I thought maybe now would be a good time to do a little reading in Psalms. So we go to the, actually this is an excerpt from the longest chapter in the Bible, Psalm 119. How blessed are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord. How blessed are those who observe his testimonies, who seek him with all their heart. They also do no unrighteousness. They walk in his ways. You have ordained your precepts, that we should keep them diligently. Oh, that my ways may be established to keep your statutes. Then I shall not be ashamed when I look upon all your commandments. I love the way the psalmist so vividly describes his love for God's word, God's law, his commandments. It's something that sometimes I'm not so sure that we do a great job of. What if more Christians shared this attitude that the psalmist pens here? Loving God's law, loving the opportunity even to follow it. What if more of us thought about following God's commandments in such a way that we feel blessed even to be able to have God's law and to be able to follow it? Because if we are to seek him with all our hearts and walk in his ways, as the psalmist writes here, I think that if we were to do that, to turn ourselves completely, to focus only upon God, I'm actually reminded here, and the psalmist might have been drawing some inspiration from this, there's a passage in Deuteronomy 6 where it talks about God's law being as frontlets over your eyes. In other words, everything that you see is seen through the filter of following God's law, following his commandments, and then walking in his ways, because of course what you see affects where you go. When you're walking towards something, you're usually looking at where you're walking, at least I hope you are. if nothing else, to avoid injury, which is appropriate here as well. So thinking about God's law is something that should be set before us, something before our eyes, something to follow, something to move towards. And I love how he describes it as a blessing just to have God's law. How often do we see having God's law, knowing God's law, as a drudgery? Whether it's deciding whether or not to go to church that morning, or to give to charity, or just giving to the church in general. How about even the simpler things? How about things like being honest? Sometimes do we think to ourselves, well, I could get myself out of trouble here if I would just lie, but I'm a Christian and I can't do that, so I guess I'll be honest. The things that God gives to us, the things that God tells us to do, he does that for our own benefit. He's doing that because it will improve our lives. And so sometimes we treat, I think we make the mistake, and goodness knows I've done it too, of thinking of some of God's commandments as something that we have to do, which it's a drudgery. It's something that we'd really rather not do if we had the option, but because we've committed to do it, then we do it anyway. If we look at God's law the way the psalmist does, if we looked at them as a blessing just to have them, a blessing to be able to follow them because blessings follow, maybe our attitude would change towards that. And when we're talking about the things that we quote-unquote have to do as Christians, the things that God has commanded us to do, I think sometimes we forget that our lives and the time that we've been given, they're not our own. We have to get out of this mentality of thinking, because if we're going to be Christians, part of that is we have surrendered our life over to Christ that now belongs to him. Well, that means any time that we take is not ours. Any money or worldly possession that we sacrifice, it was not ours to begin with. And so, as God is the creator of all things and the creator of us as well, we have to get out of this idea that our time, our effort, our money, any of the things that we go through, that they're our own. If we think of them as God's, well, then it's a lot easier to sacrifice because we're just giving back God something that he gave us. And I think that that's a wonderful way to look at it. In fact, keep in mind that in Israel's day, when the psalmist is penning this, not every nation had his law. He had the advantage, he had the foresight of looking out into the world and seeing what a world without God's law looks like. And he saw it as a blessing to have it. He saw what the other nations did other than Israel, and he said, it's a very good blessing that we have these things to guide our path, to give us something to shoot for, something to walk towards. It gives us purpose. I think the psalmist understood that well, and as Christians, we're supposed to be the new holy nation, and we should look to other people and be able to explain them with this kind of love and vigor that being a part of God's kingdom is the best thing that you can do. All right, that's going to be our show. Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.